Welcome, everyone. We are back. It's been a little bit of a hiatus, a couple months for BAMS Radio, but I am your host, Drew Yarn, back with my two cohorts, Thomas the Wizard Watts and Mobile, who is going to give us his thoughts as he was able to attend, scrimmage for the Crimson Tide and A-Day. And, of course, we're going to talk to William Redfish Barger from 89 to 93, a national champion and an SEC champion at the University of Alabama. It was a little bit of a different, tone for A-Day. First time in 17 years, no Nick Saban as he has retired and Kalen DeBoer and his crew have taken over. But this was an A-Day with a little bit of a different format, offense versus defense. You know, the offense in the white, the defense in the crimson, 34-28. The offense wins after building a 31-0 lead. Weird scoring system. The defense came back, made a game of it. But as we know, they're keeping the tradition of, the winners eat steak, which is the offense, beans and weenies for the defense. But it was an interesting spring for Alabama. Now we're in the middle of portal season. Alabama's already made one addition, maybe about to make another, and a target off the board just today. Greedy Vance, the slot corner from Florida State, Alabama had offered. It looks like he is going to go to Southern Cal and play for Lincoln Riley. So he is off the board. So it's going to be interesting because Alabama, with a lot of good young players that we saw this spring and heard about in the secondary in this freshman class, and they've already added two portal transfers of their own, Domani Jackson from USC, ironically, and then Keon Saab from national champion Michigan. They'd probably like to add a couple of more, though, from an experience standpoint, and we'll talk about that and more with my two cohorts. Well, Thomas, William, it's great to be with you guys. William, I hope you've been doing well, man. I know sometimes it's good to unplug and kind of get away from it, but an interesting spring for Alabama under a brand new coaching staff, sans Robert Gillespie and Freddie Roach. So what did you think about the format? And I know none of us are huge A-Day guys from the standpoint. I don't take a lot out of it. I just try to take nuggets and things that I think are important, but you don't want to overreact to an A-Day game. But what did you think overall?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I've been able to, learn is there's, some guys that are on that coaching staff now that not only played for Nick Saban, but, worked for him. And, they said from a day-to-day, meeting and work level standpoint, that part of the culture hasn't changed at all. They're working just as hard as they did. Under Coach Saban, and I think that, the A-Day game was, kind of a made for TV production, so to speak. I mean, it's fun for, the fans and myself to, kind of see guys out there and, in the stadium and under, simulated game, circumstances at most positions. But I think the best work, was taking place behind the scenes. Both on and off the field. I think, Kalen DeBoer is, in the process of certainly silencing a lot of, critics, mostly from fans of other schools that felt like, that he would struggle to recruit in the Southeast. And that certainly hasn't been the case to this point. I mean, he's got the number 6 rated recruiting class in the country right now. And, has quite a few guys from the Southeastern footprint and, Maryland, New Jersey, California. I mean, he's, keeping that national footprint in place, so to speak. So, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff, it's been very positive. There's some positions, primarily the defensive backs and the O-line, where I certainly think they could, stand to add some quality depth. I don't know if there's a guy that's going to be in the portal, in the next 30 days that's going to be a guy that can win a starting job, so to speak, on this 2024 team. But, that kind of remains to be seen. We've still got a lot of time left in the transfer portal season. But, I thought, if you look at what you saw or what you heard, you know, the offense looks like it's got a chance to be a, you know, a really explosive group. I think the addition of Jeremy Bernard is going to prove to be a very valuable pickup. I mean, he looks legit and looks to have an opportunity to be a you know, another, you know, quality, you know, transfer wide receiver in the likes of Jermaine Burton and Jameson Williams that, you know, is really going to contribute and, you know, be one of the, you know, the key guys on that offense this season. You know, it was kind of hard to, you know, get a feel for, you know, what that offensive line is going to look like, you know, in September. You know, I do think that James Brockermeyer certainly did about all he could do to make his case for being the starter. I thought he had a really good spring. It was nice to see the epidemic of low snaps not being a factor. You know, certainly Caden Proctor is going to factor back in, you know, when he gets on campus. And just from looking at some of the videos and the pictures that I saw online, it looks like he's slimmed down a little bit, although I think he probably needs to do it even more. So, you know, there's just, you know, the running backs, I think they're going to be, you know, better just by having Jam Miller and Justice Haynes as the starters. You know, I think that, you know, we got to see Richard Young show that he's ready. And I think Daniel Hill was a sneaky, you know, I put him on my short list of guys that, you know, impressed me that I wasn't really expecting to be impressed by. I think, you know, you don't really know how somebody that's that far down the depth chart, you know, how big of a role he's actually going to have. But it certainly looks like whatever role they want to carve out for him, it looks like he's ready for it. So, you know, on that side of the ball, there's just, you know, the quarterbacks, I think, you know, they've got a, you know, at least two guys, I think, that can, you know, win, you know, at a high level for them. And, you know, I think it's real interesting that, you know, a guy that a lot of people in that football building, as late as the national football, the college football playoffs, you know, felt like had the most potential of any of the quarterbacks in that room, and Dylan Lonergan,
yeah,
you know, kind of finished at the bottom of the heap, so to speak. And, you know, I think that might be a situation to keep your eye on. So, you know, at least on the offensive side of the football, Drew, I think there's the ingredients are certainly there to have a potent offense. We just got to wait and see how the missing pieces, you know, fill in, you know, what's going to happen at center. You know, I was told by somebody on that coaching staff that the center from Washington is way too small. You know, at the current time to, you know, be taking on 300 plus pound SEC defensive tackles. I mean, he can do everything else at an elite level, you know, pull and, you know, his agility and athleticism is off the chain, but it's a point of attack issue. You know, I think that's something that's got to be addressed in the summer, if in fact he is going to be the starting center next year. But you know, on the other side of the ball, you know, I think there's a conversation, an undertone out there that, you know, maybe this scheme change is going to cause problems. You know, maybe within the scheme, you know, there might be some growing pain, so to speak. But, you know, it's Alabama has played, you know, a version of this defense quite a bit in the latter part of, you know, Nick Saban's tenure. It's just different techniques. You know, we're not asking, you know, the defensive linemen to be two gap guys anymore. And I think that's a positive. How much of one we'll see. I certainly think it'll make it easier for them to recruit defensive linemen, you know, in today's game. But, you know, they had some really young guys on that side of the ball that, you know, really stood out to me. You know, the defensive back who may end up going down as, you know, one of the most underrated players to come out of the state of Alabama from a ranking standpoint in a long time, that, you know, showed up in a young, although super talented secondary, and looks to be ready to contribute at a high level, if not have an opportunity to start at some point in time as a true freshman. That's Red Morgan. You know, he was one of the guys that really stood out to me. You know, we got to wait and see how he does from, you know, when things pick up from, you know, just basically being a glorified scrimmage to, you know, being involved in a week-to-week game plan. But certainly the linebacker, and I'll let you pronounce it for me, Okanara, whatever the hell it is.
Aronquo, yeah, he was on.
I mean, he's, you know, certainly looks like just from, you know, see ball, go get ball type of a deal. Looks like he's certainly ready. You know, I thought there were some young defensive linemen that stood out, caught my eye. Just James Smith.
Somebody had a great A-Day, especially,
The Beeman kid. There's probably some more that I'm forgetting. But you know, I thought all in all, the, you know, the package that you saw on ESPN, you know, there's plenty of young players and returning players for this to be a really, really good football team. But you know, they're really, you know, they're a couple of weeks away from final exams and, you know, what, five, maybe no worse than 6 weeks away from, you know, guys like Ryan Williams and the rest of that recruiting class reporting. I think they typically come in the Friday before Memorial Day, and you know, then they start the summer strength and conditioning program and 7-on-7 and all that good stuff. So, you know, we're really not that far away from, you know, when the real true preparation for the 2024 season gets underway. But I think what's happened up until A-Day, you know, I think Kalen DeBoer and his staff, you know, did a really good job of, you know, getting to know the current players, you know, continuing to attract, you know, elite talent to Tuscaloosa. And certainly I think, you know, there's two schools of thought to this. There's going to be some people that are kind of have their feathers ruffled by it. And I'm certainly on the other end of the stick, but, you know, Drew, for me, I think the willingness and the friendliness that this new staff has showed, you know, the media, as far as the access that they were given. I mean, for Christ's sakes, I saw Roll Tide Willie out there, you know, practicing a blitz one day at practice. So, you know, the access level has certainly changed. I don't think Roll Tide Willie would have been roaming the linebacker room this time last year. But, you know, I mean, it's something that I think needed to happen and certainly is going to help, you know, bring the program up to, you know, the type of access and the media level that your, you know, young man and his family that's a 2025 recruit is expecting, has kind of been accustomed to at the high school level. So, I mean, I think so far, you know, for the Kalen DeBoer area, when you factor in, you know, what he's done and being able to put his, you know, stamp and not, you know, throwing the things that were great about the Nick Saban era. You know, there's you know, straw hats haven't been burned or, you know, anything like that. I mean, Coach Saban is still a welcome fixture. I think we'll get to see him later this week on the NFL draft coverage. So, I would give, you know, Kalen DeBoer and his staff, at least, you know, up to this point, you know, a solid A for coming into, you know, what might be the toughest job in college football from tradition and fan expectation and, you know, what this culture has been. I really don't think, you know, a whole lot of it has been changed. It's just been tweaked a little bit.
Well, and I'll tell you this, it's the way the way this portal era is now, where there's unlimited player movement and NIL and things, I think, you know, relating to the players and building, you know, relationships for the entire staff is very important. And certainly Nick Saban was different behind closed doors than he was in front of the media. But there was one story that came out on A-Day that really kind of resonated with me about Kalen DeBoer and their style and the way they build relationships with players. And that's the way you do it to keep them, you know, from transferring, in my opinion, and looking to move. But Tyler Booker told an interesting story, and he'll definitely end up, I think, being a captain of this team and the starting left guard. He was in study hall, and he said all of a sudden he saw his phone ringing, and it was Nick Sheridan, the offensive coordinator. And he wasn't used to getting calls from, you know, coordinators, especially, at that time of day. He answered the phone, and he said Sheridan was just telling him, you know, hey, Book, man, you've had a heck of a spring. We appreciate what you've done as a leader. We appreciate how you've been approaching things. And he was just thanking Book, you know, for the way he had, handled himself. And he said, man, that's the first time that's ever happened to me, you know, since I've been to Alabama. So I think that's why Kalen has been so successful. He and his staff, they do it a little bit of a different way. And in this climate, you have to build personal relationships, not just as a head coach or whatnot, but you have to do it from an assistant standpoint. You gotta have a deeper relationship with your guys to get them in order to, you know, to stay. And then you have to play more players. No disrespect to Nick Saban, I still think the greatest to ever do it, but he probably got out at a good time, because I think the one place where he was kind of slow to adapt was to, besides playing freshmen on special teams and in bit roles, they didn't play a ton of guys, and especially during a game, and they didn't play a lot of backups. And then guys get disgruntled, and they want, now that they can move, they'll move. They're not going to wait their turn. They want to play now. And so I think Kalen DeBoer understands that. And Nick Saban got out, I think, at a perfect time, because he really showed not a lot of drop-off in a 17-year run. And now he can seamlessly go to TV, where I think he's going to kill it. And I think he'll help the University of Alabama as well. And he's keeping an office in Bryant-Denny Stadium, which is huge. So I will say this. I agree with you, William. I don't. If you had told me a year ago, okay, Nick Saban's hanging it up, because I thought he would coach 3 to 4 or 5 more years, and the transition would be as smooth as it's looked so far. And I know there's going to be some bumps, but I got to thank, you know, Stuart Bell, Greg Byrne, the board of trustees, and then just and for going out and executing this hire of Kalen DeBoer. Because, I mean, to fill Nick Saban's shoes is nearly impossible, but it's been a great transition so far. And I think it's been a welcomed one. And I think everyone is so thankful that Nick Saban came to Alabama, because what he built enabled them to go get Kalen DeBoer, who was probably the top college coach on the market. And, I mean, for what he did at Washington was stunning, 25-3, and now he's trying to do the same thing at Alabama. So I'm certainly excited about it. And, and now I wanted to kind of switch it to Thomas a little bit, because, Thomas, I know you were able to take in a scrimmage. You were also able to take in A-Day. William did a great job of kind of breaking down what he liked, what he saw, talking about the O-line, which is a critical area. But talk about the quarterback position and kind of what you saw out of that, because I still think Milroe is ahead in this deal and certainly has entrenched himself. I think only, you know, an injury or a very poor performance is going to get him out of there. But I do like the way that Ty Simpson has responded. He seems to have matured, and he had a really good spring, and I don't know that he can overtake Milroe, but I do think he can continue to, you know, iron sharpen iron and pressure him. But what did you think overall of what you saw out of the quarterback position this spring?
So I always have to be careful when you ask me questions like this, Drew, and this is not me complaining. We only get bits and pieces, no matter what. And of the bits and pieces we saw, A-Day, scrimmages, conversations that have been had, I think Ty Simpson looked better than Jalen Milroe. Now, part of that could be because it was twos on twos predominantly versus ones on ones. There could be 1,000 reasons for it, but that's very encouraging. To tack on to that, Ty Simpson said, I'm not going into the portal. I want to be part of Kalen DeBoer's first national championship team, which, you know, you got to appreciate a guy sticking and, you know, trying to finish the drill. But I do think much in a similar vein, it's going to take a lot to unseat Jalen Milroe. And I don't buy that. I think that as game plan specifics come in, that will be where Milroe can excel. One of the things that is going to help Jalen Milroe a lot is how this offense is structured. People are absolutely right when they say Kalen DeBoer expects more from a quarterback in terms of being able to read, react, execute, put the ball on time, etc. But the offense that came out at A-Day, and they were running stuff, and Kalen DeBoer said, this isn't just going to be Darby up the middle for 25 and a half minutes. You know, they were running, hitting formations and whatnot. They weren't doing real specific stuff, but the offense has a lot of moving parts in it. And you saw jet sweeps. You saw some zone ready stuff. You saw trying to attack all over the field in some way, shape, or form. Did it always work? No. But so what? That sort of thing's going to help Milroe. Like, I think that jet sweep motion, like if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm thinking about having to defend Jalen Milroe, the last thing I want to see is what amounts to a jet sweep triple option look. Because from a jet sweep motion, you can have that Lane Kiffin pop pass or a handoff, or all that's just eye candy and there's a guy going on a deep route. So, you know, two things can be true at the same time. Based on a very small sample size, Ty Simpson had looked the best of the quarterbacks that I saw. But he wasn't decisively better. And I'm not sure what decisively better actually looks like. I will say on the other side, though, we're going to go back in the annals of Nick Saban, and I realize Nick Saban is not Kalen DeBoer. Jake Coker, the year that Blake Sims won an SEC championship, Jake Coker was supposed to be the starter. He was QB1 until the very last scrimmage ahead of, I believe, Alabama played West Virginia to open that year. And what Nick Saban does in a final scrimmage is he has a decent idea of who his guys are. You know, call it a very educated guess. And he'll take that group of guys and just put them in god-awful situations. Like, the sort of stuff that if you're a fan of the team, you don't want to see, because it's like, let me stack the odds against you. And I'm not saying, like, put 15 defenders on the field. That's silly. But, you know, two-minute drill with 30 seconds left and you're on your 25 because you just got the ball back type stuff. So, you know, can you go score a touchdown to win the game? Those would be the kinds of scenarios Nick Saban would set up. And Jake Coker had one of the worst scrimmages anyone has ever seen. I mean, he couldn't complete a pass to somebody on the offense. Blake Sims had a great day. Blake Sims got the start. The rest is history. So I think this competition, if you want to call it that, and I think the iron sharpens iron metaphor is the best here, is going to continue. It's going to keep pushing forward. And the thing with Ty Simpson, one thing that deserves repeating over and over, is Ty Simpson had a little bit of the Mac Jones disease. And what I mean by the Mac Jones disease is one bad play would turn into two bad plays, would turn into three bad plays, and suddenly you're in your head and you can't even, you know, do your snap count accurately. And you're seeing 800 defenders on the team, on the opposing team, whenever you snap the ball. He didn't have any of the yips that I saw. And that, if he can solve that, this quarterback competition will be very, very interesting. But yeah, if Alabama were to play, whoever they open up with, I think Western Kentucky, tomorrow or next week, Jalen Milroe is your QB1, and that's what happens. But we'll see. I think this is going to be one of those things that's going to be sort of fun to watch, because I want to add on to something that William said about culture.
Yeah.
The way that I've had the Kalen DeBoer era explained to me, and my just perception looking at the videos and reading reports and yada, 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 is that Kalen DeBoer is much better at meeting the players where they are versus, you know, this is the system, you're going to do the system, even if it's a square peg in a round hole, which, I mean, Jesus Christ, the square peg and round hole process only was the most successful 17-year run in college football in modern college football history. But I do think college football is changing. Transfer portal, mm-hmm. NIL, blah, 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 blah. And DeBoer's ability to meet players where they are is going to really help keep players, you know, engaged, involved, not, and think about that for somebody like Ty Simpson. This is where I'm really going to get to my point. You have a kid who was a known, not negative Nancy, but certainly has a tendency to pout sometimes, has a tendency to get frustrated, get in his head, you know, all those things you don't want in a football player. Well, DeBoer probably has a slightly better ability to get him out of that because he will more meet players where they are compared to Nick Saban. And whether it's whether it should be necessary or not, it is necessary for this, you know, frankly, no, not even a back in my day comment, for this group of players as we, you know, move forward in the NIL transfer portal era. So I think there's a lot to like about the quarterback room. And once we get into real scheme specifics for whoever wins the quarterback job, I think the offense is going to be excellent. And that's really a comfort because the defense is loaded with talent. Of course, we can talk about the DBs, blah, 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 blah. But there's the learning curve there is steeper because you are changing a bunch of stuff. You're changing a bunch of moving parts. So, you know, it might be a case where the offense has to give the defense an extra touchdown or two to play with, particularly early in the year. But that remains to be seen, Drew. That is all to say, I'm very pleased with what I saw. I'm excited for this team. I think there's a really solid vibe around it from Kalen DeBoer to the freshman, you know, punter or whoever the hell. And I don't know what else you would want as a rational college football fan as we sit here, you know, 5 months or 4.5 months, whatever the heck it is, before Alabama football kicks off for the upcoming season.
Yeah, and I was going to ask William because he delved into the defensive side of the ball a little bit, and we talked about the scheme change. I do wonder this. We've all been hard on Freddie Roach. I know I have been, but William, you made an interesting point about the scheme change and how recruiting defensive linemen. They've got a lot of good young ones on the team. I know our good friend Rodney Orr, when he was in the media viewing periods, he really liked the way that physically the defensive line looked. You mentioned James Smith. I noticed James. I thought he looked really good in the A-Day game. I actually voted for him for lineman of the game. I know the Dwight Stevenson Award actually went to Booker, but which I understand, but I thought Smith looked really good. Is this a situation where that what they're doing a little bit different schematically might fit Roach's coaching style better, you know, help him, help his group be more productive? I mean, and again, the defense was improved last year. I'm not saying the D-line was a problem, but we've lamented the fact they haven't been turning out as many pros, but schematically and the changes that they've made, do you think this is going to help the defensive line and its productivity? And is there enough talent there? To me, if they found a stud, of course they'd take one in the transfer portal, but I think it looks to me like they have enough good players.
No, I really think so. I mean, it's you know, the scheme now is what, you know, the majority of these kids grew up, you know, playing in high school. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, high school defensive coordinators that are playing their defensive lineman, asking them to be two-gap defensive linemen, just because that takes a unique skill set to pull off.
Right.
But if you just look at the way, you know, Kane Womack puts his D-line together, and I'm going to try and put this into real world something that the listeners can understand. You know, he basically plays at one defensive tackle, a nose guard, and I don't want people to think Terrence Cody when I say this.
Right.
But you know, he's going to have a nose guard type guy at one defensive tackle. So think Jaheim Otis, who is a very, very athletic, you know, version of that kind of somewhat negative thought of label at times. And then he's going to have a true three technique at the other side, You know, think Quinnen Williams. Not that there's a Quinnen Williams on this year's team, at least right now that I've seen, but that's kind of what he, you know, likes to put out there. You know, yes, I think it's going to make Freddie Roach's job easier. You know, to, as far as to recruit high school kids, it's I think it's an easier, you know, technique to teach, and for the players to learn. And, you know, and I think there's actually more guys, you know, on the roster that can fit into those two, you know, type roles. You know, and I'll say this, you know, kind of circling back around to, you know, Thomas talking about the quarterbacks one and the culture second. You know, I've got text messages from, you know, friends of mine that were at both scrimmages.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were very consistent in saying that they felt like in both scrimmages that Ty Simpson looked better than Jalen Milroe. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that Ty Simpson's going to be the starter. And you know, just from what I saw in the 8A game, to me, you know, what I saw is in year three, at least in spring practice of year three, the game has finally slowed down for Ty. You know, there were multiple bad snaps that, or I shouldn't even put that label on it, or people are going to start thinking of the guy that's playing for the Buckeyes now. There were, let's just call them busted plays, where I think in the past that Ty would have hit the panic button on. I think one of them was a running play. The other one was a passing play. That he actually was able mentally, no one's ever questioned his physical ability, but I think mentally he was able to turn them into positive gains, whereas this time last year they may not have been. You know, I think Ty showed, you know, significant growth from that South Florida game, you know, in mop-up duty against Kentucky and some other shit show later in the year. Where you could see his physical tools starting to come to the surface. But I think, you know, that's the biggest thing for any player, whether you're an offensive guard or a linebacker or whoever. But, you know, that's such a big jump from high school to college. And when that bell finally goes off to where things start to slow down and you can digest them and adjust and you know, play fast. You know, and some guys are able to be Caleb Downs and, you know, do it from day one. I know a lot of people, including myself, hope that proves true with Ryan Williams. But that to me was the biggest thing that I saw, with Ty just in the 8A game was it slowed down for him. And, you know, there were, you know, multiple reports, you know, on the other side that, you know, Milroe still takes too long to process, to get rid of the ball, you know, quick to run. There's no surprise there. That's going to be an ongoing, you know, coaching job to get him over that hurdle. But to me, and this was just, I think this took place Thursday or Friday. I don't know. It was just, you know, broached to me at dinner last night. But in the last couple of days, Kalen DeBoer gave an interview to somebody in the media. And, you know, the reporter asked him, you know, on the front end, he said, look, this is totally unfootball related, but, you know, we're trying to get the fan base to get to know you a little bit better. And he said, you know, I thought it would be interesting to ask you this question. You know, what was the last fast food drive-thru that you went through? And I don't know if you and Thomas heard the interview, but this was really – it was hilarious on one hand, but I thought it was very telling on the other, because he kind of answered it in the way, well, I'm kind of telling on myself, and maybe I only do this when I know nobody's watching, but I do like sneaking into Arby's on my way home sometimes and grabbing a milkshake.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I'm sitting here wondering, I doubt Nick and Cedric ever went through a fast food drive-through. You know, on their way back to the lake after practice. And if he had, he damn sure wouldn't have admitted it in public.
No.
So, you know, I think that brings a, you know, a real human component to, you know, who Kalen DeBoer is, you know, whether it's sneaking to a bar on your way home so your wife doesn't find out about it, or, you know, you got to weigh in at Weight Watchers Monday night, but you're still going to go great. Not that Kalen DeBoer's on Weight Watchers.
He's right. But
you know, I just thought, you know, hey, it's probably not the best thing for me, but by God, it's so good. I think that was the quarterback situation is going to take care of itself. I agree with, you know, what y'all said. It's going to take a bad performance at some point, to unseat Jalen Milroe. And, but it's, you know, it's good to know that I think a lot of the things that held two staffs ago, not even last year, that there was a lot of people in December of 2021, January 2022 of bowl practice that felt like that, you know, Ty Simpson had all the tools to one day be the starting quarterback at Alabama. And, you know, it's good to see him finally starting to, you know, trend towards being capable of that. And the other thing, too, I agree with what Thomas said. I think over the Nick Saban tenure, it was totally the player's responsibility to kind of conform and mold themselves, you know, into what the culture of the process was at that given time. Versus I think that, you know, Kalen DeBoer, not so much just as a head coach, but, you know, as a quarterback coach and a play caller, I think he's probably a little bit more willing to tweak things towards what somebody's, whether they're the quarterback or the left guard, you know, what their skill set deems they can do best at that current time. And it's going to be fun to watch that kind of unfold.
Yeah, it really will. I'm anxious to see it unfold. And like we said, so far, I think, you know, I thought there was a good round of competition, I guess I should say. And I think we'll know even more in fall camp once these kids once they get settled in with this new coaching staff and they go through a complete summer and off season. We didn't see any of Jaheim Otis. I mean, he was recovering from an injury. And then I will say this, as far as the transfer portal goes, and I think it was a good move by Greg Sankey, but I think another reason why we haven't seen the free-for-all is because right now you can't transfer within the SEC. You can't transfer within the league. That's where, you know, these players and coaches, they all compete against each other. They know each other's personnel the best. There would probably be some of that kind of poaching being tried to go on. Now, it's already happened in other sports like basketball. We just had history where, a starter for Auburn went to Alabama and Aiden Holloway, the point guard. So it's just basically a football rule. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that continues to play itself out. And as William already mentioned, there's still another month or so to go with the portal being open. So we will see, you know, who Alabama, you know, may add. Right now, the one prospect they seem to be trending for is Graham Nicholson, the Lou Groza Award winner from Miami of Ohio. He was 27-28 on field goals. I think he made 25 in a row last year. He was the first MAC kicker to ever, you know, win the Lou Groza. He would be a great addition for Alabama, especially, because, again, we haven't seen a Kalen DeBoer team at Alabama play. We have seen it at Washington, but certainly you're going to need a kicker, very likely with the way this league's going to be. It's going to be even tougher with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. Alabama's got a difficult schedule, so you need a high-quality kicker to be able to come in and execute and do things the right way. And pick up where Will Reichert left off. Will Reichert left gargantuan shoes to fill. I think he's going to have a long NFL career. To me, he's the best kicker Alabama's ever had. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens going forward, you know, with Will Reichert and in the NFL. And then if Graham Nicholson comes in and can fill his shoes, because certainly that would be a big get for Alabama. It's big to be bringing Caden Proctor back, because I think he's going to be the left tackle. Now, he'll probably need to make some changes physically and continue to drop weight with the kind of offense these guys like to run. And now that, you know, one of the big questions is, can Alabama add another offensive tackle to the room that can potentially compete for playing time? Or are they satisfied with Elijah Pritchett, even Will Conformby? We don't know. That's what's going to be really, really interesting. I thought Olosalinin, it was out of necessity if he had to play some right tackle in the spring and A-Day. I didn't think he looked horrendous. I thought he competed well. So it's nice scheme versatility that he can play both guard and tackle. And so we'll see. And then they've got young centers like Joseph Iannotta in case there's something that goes wrong with Brelsford, or even if Brockermeyer hits the portal. But I don't think the coaching staff, from what I understand, they increased his NIL. They definitely like him to stay. So going to be interesting to kind of see how that all plays out. And then, you know, I really like a lot of the young players on defense. I'm like everyone else. I was watching, the secondary in the A-A game, and some guys really stood out to me. I'd heard good things about Xavien Brown. I know, William, your former teammate, George Teague, is very high on Xavien Brown and his potential to make an impact early. I thought he had a really nice A-Day and from what I was hearing, a good spring. You already brought up Red Morgan. Will probably go down. I think he was a high 3-4-star prospect. He's probably going to end up being more like a 5-star. He's an outstanding player from Central Phoenix City, the 7A state champs. I thought Bray Hubbard, flashed some. He had a big hit in A-Day, and he's another guy that was really only a DB situationally in high school as a quarterback. So he's still coming into his own, but he looks like he definitely has some talent. There's no doubt about it. Zay Mincy, a lot of great length there. I think he could end up being a guy that can play the nickel. And it's interesting, I talked to Malachi Moore after the 8A game in the media room, and now he's a full-time safety. So he's not going to be playing a nickel type role. And then I was told by somebody, very close to the team, that Jalen Mbakwe's film was very impressive and what he was able to do in the spring. So, and then Peyton Woodyard, they've got a lot of good young DBs, and then a vet that's waited his turn like Devontae Smith. So I think overall they're in solid shape, but if they could add another DB or two to the room to help out, I think that they would do so. But I think the secondary's got a chance to be sneaky good, even though they lost, two guys to me that are first round picks at corner that are going to be really good players in Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold. But again, and of course they lost, some guys in the portal as well, no doubt about it. But I still think that they've got enough talent in that freshman class and then returning to be good in the secondary. So it's going to be an interesting, fall camp and see how much these guys have improved. And I didn't even bring up Drake Kirkpatrick Jr., who I've always felt like was underrated. He's not as tall as his father, but he had a pick that was called back in the 8A game. He's always seems like he's got just a nose for the football. He's always in the right spot. So there's just, I think, a lot of positives to be excited about, and I'm anxious to see in the fall, once they continue to have more reps in this, and then mental reps as well, learning this defense, how some of the linebacker core, because we didn't see a lot of these guys. Several of them were hurt. We didn't really get a chance to see. A guy like Jahad Campbell, he didn't play in A-Day. He'd been kind of banged up, but you know that he's a good player. I definitely, I think Deontay Lawson's going to be just fine. And then guys like Keanu Coot, who's been waiting their turn. And then I saw a lot of Justin Jefferson, some productivity in the spring as well. He looks like he and Q-Rob, a couple of seniors, Quandarius Robinson, could definitely have an impact. So overall, I just thought it was very positive, a lot of positive energy around the program. And I'm just excited for them to get started in the fall and to attack the schedule that's going to be really difficult. But it's going to be difficult, but I'm also kind of fascinated to see how, you know, I know he's all the reports I've heard about Milroe or the way he's attacked things have been good, the way he's trying to lead. I want to see if he can, you know, adapt himself to this offense. Worst case scenario, you know, he struggles and then Ty Simpson takes over. But if he can continue to progress, I thought he improved dramatically as the year went on last year. If he can progress from the neck up with his physical tools, he could be, you know, a really, really good player. And I know William already mentioned Jeremy Bernard. He looks like a dog. And I can't wait to see how Ryan Williams adapts to this offense, because he reclassified and didn't skip a beat once he played in the Alabama-Mississippi game. And you could just see the talent in the Under Armour game. And he's just a special, special player. And I'm anxious to see him make an impact both, I think, on offense and in the kicking game as well. I just think he's a special player overall. No question about that.
Well, you've mentioned one of them repeatedly, and it's jarred my memory to mention him, but also two other guys on offense that caught my eye in the A-Day game. But I certainly think, and you know, it could end up, you know, being the deciding factor as to why they don't go after another guy at that position. But I think Wilkin Formby looks ready.
Yeah.
You know, is he ready to be a starter? That's to be determined. But, you know, they're in the latter stages of the A-Day game. They put true freshman Casey Poe at right tackle. And, you know, I thought he played well in you know, the brief reps that he got a ton of reps at guard because of the lack of bodies. But you know, he's a guy that I think, you know, maybe as a backup player, you know, this year that could factor in. And one other guy that's probably not going to be, you know, wide receiver 1 through 3. But I thought he had a great A-Day game, and I was told that he looked that way throughout spring practice. But I thought second year player Cole Adams at wide receiver.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, made some big plays, and you know, certainly, you know, doesn't look like he's scared to go across the middle. So, there again, we'll have to see how these guys continue to develop over the summer, like you said. But there is no shortage, I don't think, in the 2-deep depth chart on either side of the ball. You know, for Alabama to have the type of talent at every position that they need, you know, to be one of the top teams in the SEC, you know, and the country. And you know, something else that I just noticed from a schedule standpoint, you know, it's kind of funny to see, you know, the two new teams that are coming into the conference. And, you know, the one that's kind of, you know, predicted to have a chance to be a college football playoff contender in Texas, basically outside of Michigan and Georgia, you know, I guess Oklahoma, you know, gave them problems last year. But I mean, they've got one of the easiest schedules I've ever seen. Specifically, you know, they drew basically every SEC bottom feeder. Yeah. And then if you flip things over, you know, if I'm Brent Venables, I'm stalking somebody at the SEC office. I mean, it is absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be interested to see how both of them acclimate themselves. I do think Sark knows a lot about the league and was already kind of starting that transition to what they had to do. But then they did lose Bo Davis to LSU. And Bo brought a lot of edge to their defense. I'll be interested to see how that change goes over, no doubt about it. And so we'll see. That's going to be, you know, something definitely fascinating to watch. But I will say, too, I think going in still, and I hope William's right. I hope Wilkin Formby's ready. If he is, then we may not see Alabama as aggressively attack the portal for offensive linemen. But I do think they need to, though, because I think probably a good number is probably 15 to have on scholarship. And right now they've only got 12 because, as we know, it's a battle of attrition. There's going to be injuries. You need some depth on the offensive line. So I just think Alabama, their needs, they need to probably add a DB or two and then some offensive linemen to add to go along with With Caden Proctor, who's of course an O lineman in his own right, a left tackle, a guy that you think is starter caliber, but I think they probably need to add a couple more pieces there, and then a DB or two, and then we think they could be adding Graham Nicholson. So again, 5 to 6 pieces, DB, offensive line from a numbers perspective, DB from an experience perspective, kicker just because I'm not sure they have a proven one, and they really don't. So if you go out and get Graham Nicholson, that would fill a huge need for Alabama. So that would continue to help the roster take shape. And then just retaining your own guys. I think they have a very deep running back room. William already mentioned it. I love Tam Miller. I love Justice Haynes. I really like the progress of Richard Young and his physicality. I like Daniel Hill and his ability as a receiver, and as a bigger back to bring some good stuff to the table. Kevin Riley would be that other back from Tuscaloosa County. So I think Alabama has got definite depth back there. We really haven't talked about tight end. We haven't talked about Caleb Odom. He's a flex guy that can play some wide receiver, but also be kind of a flex tight end. I'm really anxious. They didn't really focus on him in A-Day, but that's good. We'd heard enough buzz about him in the other scrimmages. And, Thomas, I can ask you about that because from what I understand, he had a touchdown in the scrimmage, the A-Club/Red Elephant Club scrimmage. So Odom is a guy that I think I'm excited about to see more of once the season actually starts. And you have guys like him, Ryan Williams, and even maybe Amari Jefferson or Rico Scott added to what's already on the team.
Yes, so the Caleb Odom hype train is deserved. I mean, yes, most fans didn't really get to see very much at A-Day. But the guy is going to be a problem for opposing defenses. And you know, you're talking, just general thought, you're talking wide receivers. With everybody coming in, you know, we've already thought that Ryan Williams, the consensus hope is instant impact, true freshman. And Jeremy Bernard, you're already getting, I realize you want to probably carry 9, maybe anywhere from 7 to 9 starting caliber wide receivers at any given point. Alabama's getting pretty close to that already. So anybody else that you're adding in, you're getting to that point of gravy, which, again, not a bad way to go about things. I know I sound like a broken record when I say this, but there's a lot to be excited about, and I want to echo something that I believe both of y'all have said. I don't know how this transition would have gone much smoother. Like, I'm sure there are ways, because I have not put Tuscaloosa under a microscope to see all the little weird, some of the weirdness that's happened in the post Nick Saban era. But from the outside looking in, I just struggle to think of how this could have gone better as a transition period away from Nick Saban and all the positives that are coming out of it. So to your point though, Drew, yeah, Caleb Odom's going to be a problem, and the depth that's coming in at the wide receiver position is strong up and down the board. Like, again, if Alabama had to play tomorrow, the top 5 wide receivers, while they're not going to be like the rideouts of a few years ago, they're certainly able to be effective. And that's, again, a good spot to be in with heavy-duty reinforcements on the horizon in the next month.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited. I can't wait to see what Kendrick Law does in this offense. We saw him do some stuff on end arounds and A-Day, but he'll be more heavily involved. I think the scheme change is going to help Emmanuel Henderson, who was hurt last year as well, but I think has a lot of natural talent. I really like Bubba Hampton. He had a short touchdown run, and he was actually lined up at running back, but he can also play wide receiver. William already mentioned, Cole Adams, who got hurt last year and had to miss the majority of the season in redshirt. But Cole is another guy that has a lot of ability that I think can really help, no question. And then Kobe Prentice, who's kind of been a steady-as-she-goes guy, he will definitely be in the rotation. Stinks that Jalen Hill got hurt. We still don't know them, but I've heard it was a kneecap-type situation. a knee injury. We don't know the severity of it completely, but it's certainly going to set him back, no doubt about it. And see, the thing about it is we talked about Caleb Odom, but they've got a lot of three-down tight ends back as well that should be able to help. C.J. Dupree, who wasn't a huge part of the offense last year, but might have a bigger role. Danny Lewis as well, who had a catch or two in A-Day. And then don't forget, Robbie Utes is still there. And they've got a guy, from a transfer from Washington, Josh Cuevas, who came in kind of under the radar, who might be able to help also. But I just think overall it was a very positive spring. And I have, you know, very high expectations for the fall. At least I think they're going to be able to get to the college football playoff. I mean, you know, the thing is, I know there's a lot of hype going around the Ole Miss Rebels, but and a lot of that has to do with Lane not having to play Alabama and Auburn. I mean, with the GOAT being retired, he's not the boogeyman anymore. And so Lane doesn't have to coach against him and have PTSD like he seemed to every time he faced, you know, Nick Saban in Alabama. So that's to his advantage. But, you know, Alabama's still going to have a tough schedule. But people ask me all the time about expectations. I don't think with what I've seen, Kalen DeBoer do in his coaching career, especially at Washington, and the talent I think that he's inheriting, he's going to have to figure it out, you know, if Milroe is going to be able to continue to progress in the system or if he's going to have to make a change. But I think they still have enough talent to definitely, reach the college football playoff. There's no reason that they don't. And so I'm really excited about the change and where things are going and thankful that I got a chance to experience Nick Saban. But if there was going to be a change made, kudos to Greg Byrne and kudos to all the folks, in the athletic department and what they've been doing. And I will say this, as we're wrapping up the show here, last few minutes, I'd be remiss. You know, we haven't joined the listeners since late January. And during that time frame, Alabama was trying to make a run to win the SEC championship in basketball. And that didn't happen. I mean, there was some unfortunate injuries, especially to Latrell Reitzel, who had a couple of concussions. And we saw, Ryland Griffin go down and miss a game or two. But what a run it ended up being for Alabama basketball. They ended up making history. They certainly didn't win the SEC regular season or tournament, but they, in the most important tournament, the NCAAs, they finally broke through. I mean, William was there during some of the salad days when there were so many NBA players and the roster was so good at Alabama. And they had some teams that were talented enough to go to the Final Four, but it never happened. But Nate Oates gets Alabama to their first Final Four ever. They give Connecticut as good a run as anybody did. Connecticut, the two-time now defending national champs. But Alabama, ends that drought, gets to the Final Four. Mark Sears goes on to have a run unlike any I've ever seen. Sets a scoring record for Alabama for a season of, I think he ended up with 797 points, just under 800. Had the best year I've ever seen a guard have. And now he's declared for the NBA draft with about Raul retaining his college eligibility. I've been told that Alabama's NIL has been almost, has been almost doubled. They have a $3 million budget for the next season. I know they're going to make him, or if not, I've heard they already have made him a substantial offer. I don't know that he's going to come back because I don't know how much he has to gain because he had as good a year as he had. But certainly, I know he's going to consider it. But I just, it's very interesting amazing to see the growth of the basketball program under Nate Oates. He lost his entire staff last year, and he lost almost his entire roster except for, Ryland Griffin and Mark Sears and then Nick Pringle. And ironically now, two of those guys in Ryland Griffin and Nick Pringle will not be back next year. They've already lost five players, but they've already gained some in the transfer portal with Houston Millett from Pepperdine. And then, of course, Chris Youngblood, a Tuscaloosa native from South Florida. And then they got, another portal commitment. We already talked about Aiden Holloway, the former McDonald's All-American, leaving Auburn to come to Alabama. And they're not done. I mean, they've got Sean Padula coming in from Virginia Tech, supposedly Thursday. And if that happens, I think that means likely Mark Sears is going to just explore his pro options and strike while the iron's hot. And no one could blame him for that. He's been through 4 years of college, two at Ohio University, pardon me, and two, with Alabama. And so if that visit happens, Padula was an all, ACC guy at Virginia Tech, then he would be a very nice, I think, replacement for Sears. Certainly, you're not going to completely replace Mark Sears, but he'd be a great one. And then just if Cliff, Omiyuri, if he does not commit to Georgetown after his visit this weekend, and if he makes his way to Tuscaloosa this coming weekend, I think Alabama's gonna sign him and find their rim protector. And so I think Nate Oates and Alabama, there's no guarantees in this world of NIL and transfers, but it does sound like they're gonna put together a very, very competitive roster again. And if the chemistry is right and they've got to replace an assistant in Austin Quant, who went on to Texas San Antonio, I still think Alabama can put together an even more talented team than this year. But that's the funny thing about basketball. Will they come together at the right time? Will they stay healthy? But I will say, now that Nate Oates has broken that ceiling of getting to the Final Four, there's no reason to think he can't put together and coach a team well enough where they can win it all. And that's the exciting part for Alabama basketball right now. I think there's only been two or three jobs that I ever worried that Nate Oates might think about taking and leaving Alabama. And it was Michigan State, which doesn't look like Tom Izzo is leaving anytime soon. Michigan, and he's already passed on that job twice, passed on it this offseason, and Kentucky. And Greg Byrne and the administration at Alabama, they didn't even give him a chance to really consider Kentucky. They bumped his pay up to the top three in the country, and they bumped up the NIL, and now they're going to build him a standalone performance center and practice facility. So it's just a great time to be an Alabama basketball fan. And now that we've got Bam's back rolling, we'll certainly continue to update you on the moves with this roster, because, as I said, they're not done. And I'm sure we'll be back to discuss, some additions to the football roster as well, because while they don't have a ton of needs, there are, I think, some spots open where Alabama needs to address the offensive line and the defensive backfield. But, I mean, all in all, I agree with William. I would give Kalen DeBoer and his staff an A so far, and there's never been a better time to be an Alabama basketball fan than now, when you see what Nate Oates and his coaching staff are doing. And I'm sure Nate's going to fill that assistant job, that open assistant job, soon. Not really a lot of buzz about names on that right now, but I'm sure in the coming days that'll happen, and that'll be another topic that we'll discuss on a future episode of BAMS. But it's been great to get back in the saddle and discuss this this offseason so far, the spring practice, and the huge run for Alabama basketball. And we appreciate the listeners. We appreciate everybody in contributing to the Patreon, and we look forward to being back for another strong cycle of BAMS Radio. No doubt about it, Thomas.
Absolutely, Drew. We appreciate the support. We will be back. I know my last big thing, I was at a wedding this past weekend, and Mardi Gras over. So I'm looking forward to getting back and talking ball and rolling on and seeing what happens. So, you can take us on out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate everyone. We hope you've enjoyed our thoughts on what we saw from A-Day and from spring practice and the buzz. And we'll be back soon to give you more updates on this roster and how it's taking shape for the University of Alabama, and delve more deeply into recruiting. They have, William mentioned it, they're number six in the country. On A-Day, they got, they added some pieces, including one of the more underrated receivers, in my opinion, in the country. And a young man from New Jersey who has already started to just rocket up the recruiting charts because of the evaluation period is, and with all the spring combines and the summer has already started.
He's a stud.
Yeah, man, and it was obvious watching his film. As soon as I saw Lotsier Brooks's film, I was like, man, that guy. As soon as people started saying Waddle, it looked like to me he had that kind of explosiveness. I just saw a one-handed catch he made at a combine this weekend. That guy is a stud, but we will delve more deeply into recruiting in the very near future, as Alabama, as William said, has 10 committed and have the number 6 recruiting class in the country right now, including flipping Antonio Coleman Jr. back from Auburn to Alabama. So, but so far, so good. They've been linebacker heavy in this class so far, and they are. But it looks like they're going to put together a very good group, and we will definitely be delving further into that in the very near future. But for everybody, we appreciate you for listening to Bams Radio, and we hope you have a great rest of your Sunday. Good night, everyone. We'll talk again soon, and roll Tide.